I think you're going to find all of your organic situations merely a reflection of change. And if you keep your inner eye on what you really want to move into and discover, explore, and to experience, these other things will take care of themselves. If you get seduced by them, if your mind pays attention to it as something that's separate from something inside of you, then you've lost your connection with the deeper. It pulls you out. Remember, we're not talking about withdrawal, we're talking about the experience of transitional levels, which do not have to be senile dementia. It does not have to be confusion. It can be tremendous lucid clarity, but your value systems will change. And what you think is important at this point ceases to be important.
And something else becomes important.
Yes.
So that the other side of senile dementia might be unusual insight.
Exactly. And just as the, I think as you listen to this particular tape, which was meant to really begin to free up your energies of concern and boredom and a bunch of other things, as you hear the tape, you'll have your own creative energy operating. My function is merely to tilt your psyche long enough for you to find it, instead of being trapped in the weightiness of certain things. It's not the specific recommendations that I make as far as what you might explore. It's merely breaking down these subtle and sometimes very strong ties that really create the oscillation and only create a greater chaotic process that must ensue, because I know your deeper intention is really to explore transition and the preparation. But the preparation, you have a mental idea in your human component of what you need to do, but it may not be what is to be experienced. Okay, good. Would you like to listen to the tape, or would you like a break, or would you like to walk outside, or?
Oh.
What do you feel like doing?
Yeah, it's still early. I think outside would be kind of nice, out in the garden, walking around perhaps a bit.
Yes. All for that.
You're getting more material for your thesis?
But frankly, my feeling is that you create these moments, not only a pneumonia, but the heart failure and so on and so forth, to escape momentarily from the focus and concern and so on. And it's not only just the practice process, but it's created for other things to happen. I don't believe you have to do it through that kind of a process. I think you can enter into pure being and harmony. And I don't mean to set that up as something that you have to do. I'm simply saying that I think you can allow more of your richness to manifest that may or may not be focused on what you thought was very, very important on one level. Mm. Well, we can go out and commune with the... And I think it contains it contains the inductive energy.
You think it's still there? My resources, I realize, were deteriorated as compared to what I was able to do in earlier years. There's a roughness in this that you won't find in earlier days.
No. But that's not, I don't think it's the issue. The issue is that you, each time you restate it, it's not exactly the same as, there's usually something that you add to it, one more component or something like that,
that I think is
helpful. One thing I brought in was the environment, not that I, it may or may not be of any importance, but I don't know.
That's right. Well, I think that's, I seem to be spilling everything here. When you're looking at relationships, and as we discover more and more that the process, perhaps life is more relationship than it is event, or object, giving a greater and greater relationship description, I think helps, despite the fact that somebody may be oriented toward just give me the hit. You never know when one of these other aspects are going to bring the psyche into a possibility. So. And each time you go into the descriptive realm of your experience, it's unassailable. It is your experience, and that's valuable. It's when we project into someone else's experience that we start to find distortion, and your ability to watch your experience as best you can, and with the heightened areas that you have, to bring it through. No matter how time-consuming and how sometimes detailed that may be. I don't know, I'm still not convinced, Dr. Wolf, that non-dual states of consciousness cannot exist in an incarnate form.
Well, I don't take a final stand there.
Yes, you did. You essentially said that that one might just as well be dead, because as long as we're in manifested form, we're going to be existing in duality. That is only the mind speaking, the mental mind that perceives along the lines of duality. I'm not convinced at this point of view. What is that?
Sonic booms.
Those are planes.
Are they?
Sonic booms, you know. We're only 130 or so miles from experimental field of the airplanes, and we get them up over here right along.
They come right through the valley. Hmm?
Yes, right. Well, Gene had a window broken by my window.
Well, they're exciting, but I can now see why they didn't allow the SSTs. By the way, I had a chance to ride a supersonic transport from New York to Paris and back. But I can now see why they outlawed them across the United States. But I can't understand why we don't have them to cross the Pacific, which is a terribly, terribly long flight, much longer than the Atlantic flight.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, on the tape, maybe you're giving an opening within your own psyche, but on the tape you preclude the possibility of non-dual states of awareness in manifest form.
Not absolutely, if you notice the word. I expressed a doubt about it.
Well, the doubt was pretty heavy. But just as you set up a witness state within a point of high indifference, and split the awareness so that it could simultaneously be in one and watching another. And even though that's a technique which may skew the possibility of what total non-dual states of consciousness are, who's to say? We still feel that one can be aware and still be present in non-dual reality. That what happens is that one is no longer operating through the lens that splits it into good and evil. Somehow when you reach the state of resolution, even though you couldn't conceptualize it or articulate it, the reason why you couldn't articulate it to me is that it was a non-dual state of consciousness of which you were still present and still operating in and still here, even though you were exploring immense input, you were still functioning. And that the minute you flip over to a side that's going to articulate it, you automatically take it out of non-dual state by the intrinsic nature of the intellectual pursuit, or the intellectual mechanism. It perceives and is constructed along lines, and reality is created through that lens in a dualistic way. A non-judgmental state of consciousness that is not discerning the difference between anything can still be present in this plane and operating perhaps, only perhaps, under a greater wisdom and a greater action than does the rational, thinking, logical, deductive mind. I'm not saying, not within the society that we have created, which demands that we operate within the rational, logical, but there may be the potential that a non-dual existence is actually in far greater ultimate harmony with all it is than is the rational dualistic. I just would argue a little bit that
I wouldn't question the harmony at all there. No, it would have to be a harmony.
I think it's why you sense the Ananda beyond anything that you had known, because you left the area of object, subject, and problem, and so on and so forth. You fused. But you didn't disappear. And I'm not sure, I'm surprised also that you left out trees and things like that, because there's no question that there are sensory processes going on within trees. If you ever notice how they follow the light and they're stimulated by the light, and how they move in rapid sequence photography.
Well, you know, I did mention the environment is determined.
You mentioned predominantly plants or animals and humans, and I'm only for the tape if you want to share this particular criticism and critique, only from the standpoint that there's a sensitivity as one begins to expand the definitions of senses and responses, that of course the plant kingdom operates very similarly, only not perhaps sometimes to the degree and perhaps in more subtle ways than do animals and humans. But the sensory system within a plant is highly, highly evolved. It's not focused and centralized like it is within the animal kingdom. It is a diffuse, but one can't make the judgment of either greater or less than. It's obviously survived and been here a lot longer than we have in the manifested plane. And I'm not sure its awareness, whatever is the awareness of trees and plants, and I haven't gone into it deeply enough, but I'm not sure that it's not involved with perhaps the possibility of non-dual existence and still manifested. You do make a statement in your tape. That manifested levels cannot, one cannot have manifested levels without dualistic consciousness. I'm not sure that's true. There's still room to explore. There's still room to consider through other experiences other than through the lens of the
intellect.
I know, but I'm not. The other thing that I would like to offer, since I won't be here on Sunday, is we can no longer state that truth can be defined through independent observation, because the very nature of consciousness is such that it is not separate in its basic nature. And simply because there may be two individuals living in entirely different areas of the world and in different time references does not mean that it does not preclude the possibility that there has been a telepathic impress and that there have been certain levels of communication passed between these areas, so that the independent observation is not an independent observation, but it is essentially a propagation of a single experience that keeps getting compounded through a series of people who seem to be independently observing. And if this isn't taken into consideration, without this knowledge and without definite proof that this takes place, which we know it does take place, it then undermines the strength of your particular dependence upon the acceptance of the statement within the secret doctrine. And this has to be taken in no matter whether anybody likes it or not, because this is how falsehood is propagated, through an apparent lack of the mind perceiving another possibility of how two people can have independent observations and yet perhaps still be viewing an illusion. This isn't to state that the truths may be truths, may not be truths, they may be truths, but there's enough evidence that I can come up with out of other arenas to show that we do not take into consideration the mind field in your conclusion that this must be truth because it was viewed by independent observers. That, at this point in our development, is an assailable position. It is not an unassailable position, as it was several hundred years ago when no one could conceive that we were all interrelated, both in time and space and non-time and non-space. So, my concern, as I have watched certain developments come through, particularly channeling processes and particularly the processes of wisdom, is that groups gather around certain force fields within wherever this is held, and it's externalized or reincarnated many, many different times. And it does not have to do with that it is a new experience. It is something that reincarnates over and over again and still contains the possibility of distortion rather than truth. My final comment about the tape, which ties into what I was really trying to point out, is that if there is a preference within the psyche to move towards the brotherhood of light without the simultaneous entertainment of the brotherhood of the dark, you will automatically, and it's the very statement that you state over and over too, is by the very nature of your preference, you automatically create its opposite to the same degree. And the greater one has the yearning for the creation of the light brotherhood, the good, the forces of what we perceive along that line, without reaching that equilibrated state within the psyche that can integrate both for the potential of fusion, you automatically create and empower its opposite. Automatically. It's intrinsic within concept. Just as you well state. Therefore, there is an admonition here from the standpoint of how to get to being without skewing and creating the very opposite force, creating the very problem that one is trying to overcome by quote-unquote going into the positive side or going into the negative side, which creates the positive side. One way or another, these are not understood, and because we cannot deal with guilt and we cannot deal with disowned aspects of the unconscious, because we don't understand their operation, we will invariably report to somebody in the external process that our preference is along a certain line. I think that that's the prejudicial level that is not for the beginning student. From the standpoint, the beginning student has to be oriented along a positive line, because it has to be counterbalanced within the psyche. An equilibrium has to be reached. It's a redemptive process. It's a balancing process. But at some point, there must be a release from that into the fulcrum point or the balance point. Otherwise, you create just the opposite of what your intention was. So with that statement, this is it's a very difficult realization to accept in the rational mind, particularly the conditioned rational mind. It's not at all difficult to accept in the mathematical mind, which no longer gives value to a negative figure or a positive figure, but simply accepts them for
both.
Yes.
Equally.
So somehow, the minute we become skewed, no matter how subtly, towards one aspect, it was why I brought forward the statement, we create our oscillation. I've seen over and over again someone who develops the positive, who then is thrown through forces beyond their control into the exploration. The approach of acceptance of the mathematical formulation that they simply are what they are and they interact and are necessary in the process of duality frees the mind from the guilt process and opens it to seeing what is. So this is it's something that we're obviously talking about the ultimate fusion as a ultimate, if there is such a word, or possibility. Mm-hmm. I'm simply saying that sometimes in the teachings there are subtle processes where we move from that great clarity, we move more into our conditioned emotional process, just as the Bodhisattva vow last night that I talked to you about contains, and I watch your energy and I watch you change when you state the Bodhisattva vow. The Bodhisattva vow contains more than just clarity of statement and wisdom. It contains an emotional energy also.
Yes, because there's a feeling factor involved, mm-hmm. or you'll never be led to take it.
No. Well, the question is, how to not exclude the emotion, but how we can look at mental balances, we can look at emotional balances, we can look at masculine and feminine balances. Over and over again, if we're going to discuss holism and holistic processes, if we're going to talk about holy, if we're going to talk about the inclusive nature of consciousness, there cannot be an outside exception that says, but when you get into this area, this is not, this is some sort of special case or whatever it is, it's outside, it's a mistake, it doesn't belong, and so on and so forth. Now let's get back to what we can really, you know, call whole. That can't be done, and that's what I see over and over again. Not so much in your work, Dr. Wolf, because I've heard you sit and discuss the process. In fact, you made a statement one time where it was perfectly apparent to you that the path of dark or the path of light would eventually lead to an antechamber where they both fuse. that the process was a Y that splits.
Right. Inverted Y.
And an inverted Y. And interestingly, of all things, the film Star Wars and The Empire Strikes Back, all of which look like comic strip character processes, essentially teaches exactly that. That the forces of good and evil are manifested by but a single force, which appears split at this level. I was playing around just very briefly with the idea of creating a story where the good force and the bad force become aware of somebody who's going to do away with both of them because he's going to move towards non-dual, which means the cessation of either one of them, and therefore they both got to fight the non-dualistic because it means a cessation to their particular process. It's a very fascinating story that I'm working on right now. Because if I were to take the Star Wars thing, you haven't seen Star Wars yet, but essentially Yoda represents the good force and the long, long tradition. It would be like the Brotherhood process. And Darth Vader represents really more like the Lucifer process, the Luciferian process, the Mephisto. Both of them fight each other. and they're always fighting. The good forces obviously go out and try to get rid of the bad forces, and the bad forces are always trying to get rid of the good forces. Well, once you postulate that there might be a third force that would annihilate them both, they must, by their own nature, somehow get together to fight it. It's very interesting to me what will happen when the light and the dark brotherhood must combine forces to annihilate this young upstart that is thinking about non-dualism.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, it's great humor, if nothing else.
Yeah. Well, that is what I'm going to give them to some people morning.
I think they'll enjoy it very much, Dr. Wolf, and particularly,
Excuse me, please.
Let's see what...
...process. And if in such a form, it may be useful on the future. That's the value of this dog.
Well, you also began to bring in personal content, which was very important. You began to do this after the death of Gertrude. Something inside of you could not and would not bring through personal content as personally as you have brought it through. In a number of tapes which give highly descriptive term which a portion of your mind reacts to and doesn't like.
No, I don't like.
And, but a... If we're going to deal with the spectrum of responses, we have to... This is exactly the information that's necessary for somebody coming along, because they will model you into an illusion which misses the point. What you are, and all of you, is what makes you what you are in your presence. And people are still locked into an attitude or an idea that there is only a single aspect from which you operate. And if we don't have the spectrum of responses, what we do is that we create this thought form which never contains the full richness of the individual. Mm-hmm. And it's all of your forces that make you who and what you are, not just one aspect.
Well, I did put down into what I call the Z-tapes. material that I never put down before.
Yeah. Well, it's for instance, the only other mystic that I know, and you may not consider him a mystic, but I do, is Walt Whitman. And he's the only one I know of that described every subtle feeling, every experience, imperience, to use your word, the process of leaves of grass and the song of my soul, and so on, is really one of the most powerful descriptive developments of someone who reaches transcendental states of consciousness through an entirely different process than you did.
Mm-hmm.
You reached down, and Whitman reached up. You brought down the transcendental experience. Whitman used the whole aspect of the human creature, all of the emotions, all of the feelings. He took those, integrated them, and was swept up into a much, much vaster and truly the equivalent space. But he was willing, in a time period when it was considered totally improper, immoral, to reveal certain thoughts and attitudes and ideas. In fact, in certain hotels, you know, certain sections were cut out of Leaves of Grass so that, you know, no one was offended by what he had to say. It is devastatingly honest, tremendously vulnerable from the standpoint of bringing himself to reveal his entire being, of which one knows that there will be a vast proportion of people that will reject it because they cannot handle that content in themselves.
Mm-hmm.
But when one is integrated that content, suddenly there is this rich story that is brought through that is clearly an amazing, amazing transformation. All the way from his youth into his later life, and the ups and downs even after it comes in. The seductions back into certain processes, and he had the power of description to be able to bring it through. So this, to me, is far more valuable than when somebody is only speaking from the distillation of wisdom, because it implies, it leaves off the whole foundational structure on which the all of the interplay of forces led to the distillation of wisdom.
Mm-hmm.
And the 22 years that you spent is not a time period that is to be ignored.
Well, you see, I have a bunch of these Z tapes kept in a separate box,
mm-hmm.
in which I put in material that I wouldn't have done before at all. Just acknowledging facts about myself as a human being. And, because of what you said, very largely,
mm-hmm.
that we don't have this data.
We don't. We have it so in such limited degrees that, for instance, the study then becomes integratable in a way that can't be understood when we only have the distillation. As I say, I know of no other person who has done this to any degree other than Walt Whitman. Even Thoreau and Emerson and so on and so forth never really gave us their content. They gave us really distillation, and they were heavily influenced by Vedantic philosophy. Vedanticism. Anyway, the personal ego sense, as I say, oftentimes rebels because it also is attuning to an image and to a heightened form and its expression. But if we're willing to let things be as they are, something else comes through that is astonishing. You know, there's an interesting article that I must send to you. It's written by a fellow named Jim Matheson, and I can't think of the title of the article, but he has an interesting background of sciences, I believe. Anyway, I'll send you it just to be sure, and you can read it. But he was talking about the Hopi Indian, and not only does the Hopi Indian and the Navajo Indian, in their very language structure, they don't have such a thing as time. They don't orient themselves in time. They don't have past tense and future tense. Their whole language structure is involved with everything is present. It's present. Now, it may be near or far in the